Hello to our listeners. Welcome to the Women Governance Trailblazers podcast, where we listen to the journeys of trailblazing women in the corporate governance field, their passions, struggles, and commitment to improving how companies and boards function. My name is Liz Dunshy, and my co-host is Courtney Camlett.
Hi, everyone.
Courtney and I are both passionate about governance, and we want to spotlight some of the amazing women who share that passion. We're connecting with guests from different paths and industries to hear their perspectives on what has surprised them in their career and where they think the field of corporate governance is going. For this episode, we're talking with Amy Zimmerman, who is a partner at Wilson Sonsini, leading their Delaware office and governance practice. Amy also serves on the firm's board of directors. Amy's practice focuses on providing advice on all aspects of Delaware corporate law and related corporate governance issues, including fiduciary duties, mergers and acquisitions, and stockholder activism. She also guest lectures at Harvard Law and the University of Pennsylvania Law School on governance matters. So she is a busy lady, and we are excited that she took time to talk with us. We're so thrilled to have you here, Amy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
So are we. I'm glad we get a chance to talk with you, Amy. So looking at your background, you've practiced law for a number of years, the last 10 of which have been at Wilson Sonsini. What led you to law school and your focus on corporate governance? And did you always know that you would end up practicing law in Delaware?
No, I did not. And it was all really a matter of happenstance and following the right path in life as it lit up in front of me. So when I decided to go to law school, I had actually been working for a United States congressman for a couple of years. And I had the sense that I really wanted to further my education in law and policy and those nuts and bolts. So I talked to the congressman about this thinking, and he encouraged me to go to law school, which was really the first time I thought hard about it in my life. But, you know, his thinking was that it's a very versatile and cerebral education to get, and he thought it would suit me well. And as I thought through it, I agreed with him. So that's what sent me down the law school path. But when I went to law school, I thought that I would go back into politics and public policy. That was really at the time my passion. But what happened was, when I left politics, I just did not miss it as much as I thought I would.
Surprise, surprise.
Yes, yes. Some of those might relate a little bit to the role of women in society. And then I found that when I went to law school and I started taking corporations type classes, this new world opened up. And I thought, I really am interested in this body of law that pertains to the relationships among board members and stockholders and management, how do boards make their decisions? How do they get challenged? I was reading all those old seminal cases like the Disney compensation case and Van Gorkum, and it really fascinated me. And then when it comes to why I ended up in Delaware, again, that's actually really happenstance. I grew up in Southern New Jersey. And when I was in law school, I said, let me look at this very interesting legal market that's nearby that appears to be very vibrant. And I also, at the time, was taking care of my grandmother, who was quite ill. And she lived in Southern New Jersey. So I knew I had to return to the area after law school and ideally during the summers in law school. So that all made me gravitate toward Delaware, but it just so happens that I love corporate governance and it is the perfect place to practice corporate governance. So it was really all of these oddities in my life that took me to where I am.
That is the corporate governance mecca.
Yeah, it is.
And, it is, yeah.
And it's great that you were open to taking those opportunities and finding a place that was a good fit for you. I lived in Delaware for a semester in law school. I externed for Justice Holland on the Delaware Supreme Court, and I found it to be just such a fabulous community of practitioners, and everybody is so professional and committed to practicing in an honorable way.
That's exactly it. And he was emblematic of that. He actually became a lawyer in our Delaware office at Wilson. I don't know if you saw that.
Yep.
And he was just a phenomenal human being and passed away not too long ago. We all miss him, but he really did represent the best of Delaware and what you just said.
Yeah. Well, companies are navigating a very polarized environment right now. And there is still quite a bit of support for the notion that stakeholders other than shareholders can or even should be considered by boards as they make decisions in the best interest of the company. What are your thoughts, Amy, on whether Delaware law permits that? And are you seeing any changes lately in the way boards consider and document decisions in light of this backdrop or any other developments?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a really important and dynamic area of practice and board decision making right now. I spend a lot of time on it with clients. I do think that Delaware law permits Delaware corporations and boards and management to think about stakeholders and various constituencies. To be clear, the way Delaware law works is that directors and officers have their fiduciary duties. And the purpose of those fiduciary duties, as long as the company is solvent, is to advance stockholder value. That is the ultimate focus of a Delaware corporation. And I think we have a lot of case law that makes that clear. But when you think about it from a common sense perspective, and I think the Delaware case law supports this as well, when a board makes decisions to advance and protect the value of the company, the board can and should think about an array of factors that affect the company's value. And I think this is precisely how a board can and should think about things like, how are our employees doing? Can we make charitable donations? How are we perceived by customers or users and local communities or distant communities? I think the board gets to think about all of those things when thinking about the value and well-being of the company. And the business judgment rule on top of it provides a lot of protection to Delaware corporations, right? This is the concept that in your typical day-to-day decision making, judges don't want to second guess what boards do, and boards get to think about a broad panoply of factors to support their decisions. So I think there is that flexibility under Delaware law. At the same time, you know, it's important to note that if a company decides to sell for cash in an M&A event, the analysis does change and the focus is on short-term stockholder value. But outside of that context and maybe some other discrete context, I think boards have a lot of flexibility. Now, the flip side of all of this is I do spend a lot of time with clients these days thinking about corporate purpose and ESG and all this flexibility that companies have. But we're also seeing, as you know, a lot of anti-ESG type forces in the world and backlash. And so, you know, for a while, the focus was, how do we navigate ESG? How do we try to do the right thing in the world and think about various stakeholders? But now I think companies really have to think about the backlash that is brewing, whether that's federal and state legislative activity or the types of controversies we've seen of late involving companies like Budweiser, Disney, et cetera. And so I think companies are understandably thinking about, how do I wade through ESG issues, social issues, the consideration of stakeholders, and do it the right way without ending up in trouble that we didn't intend.
Right. And how does the board set a framework for that, that management can execute? Because I'm sure not all of those decisions, like, you know, advertising decisions, are probably not specifically making it to the board level in many cases. So.
Exactly. And a conversation I've started to have with clients is that you do want to have your board members and your executive management team think very methodically about these issues, figure out what kind of company you want to be, what positions you're willing to take or not take. And to your point, Liz, think through, what sorts of controls do we have at the company for how we make these decisions and how we engage in certain types of advertising? Mm-hmm. Because as we've seen, it can flare up and even probably pose some threat to the company's value, at least in the short term.
Yeah.
Social media just creates a lot of reputational damage, I think, more so than probably companies would have even imagined 10 years ago. So that is definitely something that's at the forefront of boards' minds, is not just, you know, the presentations they get, but also the social media aspect and the reputation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those of us with kids think about social media and the quick hairline moments that can happen with kids and the sensitive situations they can be in. But I think it's the same way for corporations as well, when you stop and think about it.
Mm-hmm. So something that I've heard less and less about, but was big for the last few years, is public benefit corporations. You co-authored a piece last year in the Harvard Law Forum on corporate governance regarding converting to a public benefit corporation. Do you still see companies looking to go that route?
Yes. Yeah, I've seen a lot of activity regarding public benefit corporations, and it's continued. Much like everything, there was a little bit of a chill on corporate activity with the economic choppiness that we've all seen.
Yeah.
The questions about public benefit corporations and the potential conversion of that form are still coming in. And just to set the stage for people listening who might be less familiar with this, the public benefit corporation is a Delaware stock corporation. It's for profit. It looks and feels in a lot of ways like a typical Delaware corporation. It has a board and management and stockholders, and it can engage in all the usual corporate events and transactions. It's governed by Delaware corporate law and the Delaware statute, but the key difference is the purpose of the public benefit corporation. So a few minutes ago, we were saying that with a traditional Delaware stock corporation, the ultimate focus is enhancing stockholder value. But for a public benefit corporation, the rules change, and the board and management of a PBC have to manage and balance three sets of interests: stockholder value, a particular public benefit purpose that's set forth in your charter, you know, whether that's environmental sustainability or the responsible development of AI or whatever it might be. That's your second focus. And then your third focus is the best interests of those affected by the company's conduct. And so you take those three sets of interests, they have to be balanced. And that's the essence of the Delaware Public Benefit Corporation. Only stockholders can enforce that balance. So there is some protection there that it's not sort of all bets off in terms of who can sue a board and their decisions. But bottom line, I am seeing a lot of ongoing interest in this form. We've helped at our firm two large public companies convert to the PBC form. There are, the last I looked, about 20 public PBCs in existence. There are thousands of private PBCs. We've worked with many, including some unicorns. So this is a real area of innovation, and I expect to see it continue.
That's good to know. Thank you for the primer as well. What else are you seeing that's been changing the most in governance over the last few years? And do you see the pace of change continuing to increase here?
Yeah, it's one of the things that is enjoyable about being a corporate governance and Delaware lawyer. Is there are always new things going on. It's shockingly so.
Oh, public benefit corporation is a great example of that.
Exactly. They've only been around for about 10 years, and it's really the last few years, I think, that they've gotten a lot of traction. And, you know, a few years ago, we were dealing with the pandemic and all of the M&A deals that unraveled in the midst of it and everything else boards had to deal with. And it's always something different. Right now, in addition to corporate purpose, we're spending a lot of time talking with boards about their oversight obligations. As I'm sure you both well know, there have been a lot of high-profile litigations in Delaware about the oversight obligations of board members and management with overseeing legal compliance and risk. So we've seen litigations against Boeing and pipeline companies after they've had oil spills, and Bluebell ice cream that had listeria outbreaks. McDonald's had a big litigation pertaining to gender and sexual harassment issues. The board was vindicated there, I should note. Disney has one pending right now about the DeSantis situation. And so oversight is a huge area of focus. And I think that dovetails with all the things that directors have to think about and balance in this environment. We also see a lot of focus right now on conflicts of interest when boards make decisions. You know, are they benefiting uniquely from the decision? Do they have close personal or economic relationships to those who do? We're seeing a lot of focus on controlling stockholders who are influential. That's why you see Elon Musk getting sued in the Court of Chancery. He has been viewed at times as a controller of Tesla. And so conflicts of interest continue to be an area of focus. But I think the bottom line from a corporate governance Delaware perspective is that our court in Delaware, the Delaware Court of Chancery or Business Court, has been busier than ever. The judges work so hard. There are seven of them. And it just is a testament to the fact that stockholder litigation continues, parties fall into business disputes, and that always generates new trends and issues to think about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Delaware has been very busy. But for lawyers outside of Delaware who work with Delaware incorporated companies, what are the most common scenarios where they should be calling a Delaware lawyer like yourself but tend not to? And do you have recommendations for other lawyers could best partner with Delaware counsel on these matters?
Yeah, I mean, right now, a big focus of my practice, and I think Delaware lawyers have a role here for sure, is working with boards and board committees on difficult governance situations. Some of the things I'm working on involve companies that are not doing well financially, companies that have board disputes and disagreements going on, navigating sensitive stockholder activism and M&A situations. At their core, those things all involve fundamental Delaware governance issues and fiduciary duty issues. So I think there's a lot of room for Delaware lawyers there. And I will tell you that part of what's fun about being at Wilson is I don't just work with Delaware corporations. I work with corporations formed in all sorts of jurisdictions because of our big footprint, but we can look to Delaware law by analogy, which is a fun way to approach practice. But when it comes to people picking up the phone and calling Delaware lawyers, it really runs the gamut. You know, it's big sensitive M&A transactions. It's tuning up your charter and bylaws to deal with all the changes in Delaware statutory law or the universal proxy rules. It's thinking about things like, did we mess up our stock issuances or our equity grants? Are we designing our equity plans correctly to comply with the Delaware statute? Another big area of practice right now is private company financing rounds, where we're seeing a lot more down rounds and pay-to-play transactions that involve very intricate structuring issues. So I think you got to pick up the phone and call Delaware lawyers and involve them on a whole array of issues, and probably something that you can do, whether you're a board member or a national lawyer, is be in touch with your Delaware lawyers, at least on an annual basis, and figure out what is going on in the Delaware market. What do I need to know about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll be in touch.
Sounds good.
So picking up on our earlier conversation about stakeholder capitalism, our final question is one that we ask all of our guests, and that is, what do you think women in the corporate governance field can add to the current conversation on the role of corporations in society?
Well, you know, I think it's common sense that women are more involved. We are half or more than half of the population, right? All of this decision-making impacts us and should involve us. And I think when we think about how corporations need to be managed and run, women are a big part of that. We're a big part of the workforce. I'm painting with very big, you know, brushstrokes in what I'm about to say here, but I think women have very valuable views on how to create sustainable structures for the betterment of society and humanity. And how do corporations fit into that? How do we think about corporate purpose? I think women have valuable perspectives there. And I think that what we're seeing, and this is a terrific development, is that boards are more diverse than ever, with women and people of color and other types of diversity. And something I noticed in my own practice with all the sensitive governance situations I deal with is that independent directors are often at the helm. You know, they're set up in special committees to guide a company through disputes and activism and M&A and so forth. And those are often women and people of color who have those independent director spots and are making these really critical decisions. So women and other diverse people really do have a seat at the table. They're doing really important things. Their advisors should also be diverse and bring different perspectives. So I think women are just an inherent part of all of this. And the movement we've seen in this direction is just fabulous.
Yeah. So true. And it's great to see women and all sorts of people, diverse backgrounds and you know, ethnicities showing up more.
Right.
Well, thank you, Amy. And thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of Women Governance Trailblazers. We are always seeking connections with other women governance trailblazers. So please reach out to Liz or me on LinkedIn. And also please subscribe on whatever platform you use for podcasts. And we would love if you would rate us while you're there.
Thanks, Amy.
Thanks for having
me. Thank you.